You're listening to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M, where she breaks down the nitty gritty basics of nursing concepts. Hello and welcome to the Nitty Gritty Podcast with Nurse M. Today I'm going to talk about the parathyroid glands, and we're going to cover both hypoparathyroidism and hyperparathyroidism. But before we do that, it's really important for you to understand what the parathyroid glands even do and the key factors that we need to consider as we discuss both the hypo and the hyper aspects of it. So the parathyroid gland is responsible for regulating calcium and phosphate levels in the body. Now, calcium and phosphate have a very unique relationship in that they are always going to be the inverse of each other when we're talking about the parathyroid gland. So if we have too much calcium in the body, we will have a hypophosphate level, and vice versa. A hypocalcium will be a hyperphosphate level. So they are like the teeter-totter phenomenon, where when one goes up, the other will go down, and vice versa. The parathyroid gland also secretes parathyroid hormone, which we write out as PTH. That's the abbreviation that we use. And that's going to be important for you to remember because we're going to talk about the signs and symptoms that are associated with hypophosphatemia. And I'm going to use those letters to help you remember this. So there are four parathyroid glands located on your thyroid. There's two on each side. And the parathyroid gland is stimulated, again, by low calcium levels in the body. So when our calcium drops in our system, it stimulates the parathyroid glands to release PTH. When we release the PTH, that parathyroid hormone is going to act in two places, the kidneys and the bones, to increase the calcium levels so that we can, you know, maintain or get our calcium levels back to a normal zone. When the PTH acts in the kidneys do three things. They will reabsorb calcium and prevent it from being excreted so that we can increase levels. The kidneys will excrete phosphate, again, because if you remember, if we don't have enough calcium, we have too much phosphate in the system. And then it will also activate vitamin D in the small intestine, which will increase absorption from food to increase the calcium levels. So those are the three things in the kidneys that PTH does. For the bones, parathyroid hormone stimulates osteoclasts to break down the bones through bone resorption, not bone reabsorption, but bone resorption, which is the process of remodeling. It involves the removal of hard bone tissue by the osteoclasts, which release the calcium, and then it's followed by the laying down of new bone cells by osteoblasts. By doing this, it's increasing the calcium levels. So that is how the parathyroid glands work in terms of calcium and phosphate and PTH. Now let's talk about hypoparathyroidism. Basically, hypoparathyroidism is going to be low secretion of PTH by the parathyroid gland. So because we're not going to be secreting PTH, it means that these patients are going to present with hypocalcemia and hyperphosphatemia. So we're going to have really low calcium levels, and we're going to have the inverse of that, which is a high phosphate level. The reasons why this will happen is either there's been some sort of damage to the thyroid or the parathyroid gland directly, and that can occur through like a thyroidectomy. Like if they just remove part of the thyroid, because maybe they had hyperthyroidism, they go hand in hand sometimes. It's not going to secrete the same amount of PTH, and we're going to have problems with calcium. Or maybe they've got some sort of cancer, and cancer treatments have damaged the parathyroid glands. It also might be the result of low magnesium. Now, we need magnesium in our system to release the parathyroid hormone. They work together in that same sense as well. Or it could be an autoimmune issue, or maybe the body is just resistant to parathyroid hormone. And so because of that, it's not going to work in the kidneys or on the bones to increase calcium levels. So what do these patients look like who have hypoparathyroidism? Remember, now here's the P of the pie. So it's driven by calcium and phosphate levels. And we keep talking about parathyroid hormone. We keep saying PTH. Well, for hypoparathyroidism, if you just remember PTH, the P stands for paresthesia. These patients are going to have numbness and tingling in the face. They're also going to have a positive Trousseau's and a positive Chevaux's sign. And I'm going to talk about this momentarily after I get through this acronym of what a positive Trousseau and a positive Chevaux's sign looks like. The T is for tetany, which is going to involve muscle cramping everywhere. But tetany is not just muscle cramping. It can also be cardiac dysrhythmias, carpopedal spasms, dysphagia, muscle and abdominal cramps, visual disturbances, and even seizures. And then the H is we're going to have hypocalcemia and hyperphosphatemia. So those are, make sure you keep them separate. So hypoparathyroidism, because the parathyroid is directly related to calcium, that is what is driving this. So it's going to be too little calcium, and we're going to have a lot of phosphate on the flip side. And then these patients are also going to have hypotension. Now, Chevaux's and Trousseau's sign, Chevaux's starts with a CH, and the way I remember this is Chevaux's is like on your cheek. And so Chevaux's sign, and I apologize if I'm not pronouncing these correctly, it's just how I say it. It's twitching of the face in response to tapping over the area of the facial nerve. So when you have a patient with hypocalcemia or low calcium levels, and you tap on the side of their face, they will have this involuntary like muscle twitching that is occurring. Now Trousseau's sign, a positive Trousseau's sign, is a carpopedal spasm that results from ischemia when a blood pressure cuff is inflated. So someone's got hypocalcemia and you're taking a blood pressure. When you're at the maximum amount of inflation and it's really cutting off blood flow down to the lower arm, what you'll see in those hands is the fingers and the wrists start to really kind of keel inwards, and it starts to look a little bit like a clamshell. If you've never seen what these look like, I encourage you to look it up, just because they are unique features specific to hypocalcemia. So what are we going to do, and what are our interventions going to be? Well, with hypoparathyroidism, because we know that calcium and phosphate are involved, right, we are going to monitor their vital signs and their airway, especially because of the tetany possibly going on. Tetany can lead to bronchospasm, laryngospasm, dysphagia. So we have a potential airway issue when it comes to hypoparathyroidism. And we're going to initiate some seizure precautions. So you're going to want to have suction at the bedside. You're going to want to have, you know, seizure pads on the side of the bed, because in the event that someone has a seizure, you want to be prepared for that. You're also, with that tetany and possible issue with seizures, you're going to want to have like a tracheostomy set, oxygen at the bedside. So you want to have airway equipment. And then we're going to monitor those calcium levels, because we want them to come back up to normal. Now, a normal calcium level is going to be around 8 to 10. So if someone has a calcium level in the 7s, for example, they might be experiencing Trousseau's sign or Chevaux's sign. Again, that's just a very rough lab value, 8 to 10. It could be different depending on where you're working. So I say defer to whatever you've been told or whatever your lab says. And then the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to administer medications, with the entire goal being to increase calcium and decrease phosphate levels, because we know that this is the primary problem in hypoparathyroidism. So we're going to give IV calcium gluconate because we need to increase the calcium levels. Well, great, that's going to increase calcium levels. You can also give oral calcium with vitamin D. That will help increase calcium levels. And then we're going to give phosphate binders. And phosphate binders are designed to get rid of phosphate. It is taken before someone eats a meal, with the idea being that the phosphate binder is going to bind to the phosphate in the food that the patient is consuming so that it cannot be reabsorbed. If we can't absorb calcium, we're not going to have, and we excrete it, we're not going to continue to have a hyperphosphatemia level. And then we'll give a parathyroid hormone replacement injection called Natpara. Now, how do we evaluate and educate this patient, which is the E of the pie that I use? Right, we're going to evaluate them, and we're going to see that they will have reduced numbness and tingling if we can normalize the calcium levels. Their calcium levels are going to return to a normal level. They're not going to have all of those signs and symptoms that we discussed, like the paresthesia or the Trousseau's and Chevaux's sign. They're not going to be hypotensive. They will all normalize when we get those calcium levels back to a normal level and the phosphate levels in a normal area as well. And then we really need to educate these patients with the hypoparathyroidism about having a diet high in calcium and low in phosphate, and educate them on calcium and vitamin D, because we know that vitamin D enhances the absorption of calcium from the GI tract, which is why we do that. And then we're going to educate these patients on phosphate binders and really help them understand what the purpose of the phosphate binder is, and that they take it right before with a meal rather than they eat the meal and then an hour later they take it. That's not going to do anything for them. We also talk to them about parathyroid hormone replacement therapy and potentially getting a medical alert bracelet. Now that's hypoparathyroidism. If we now flip into hyperparathyroidism, and we know that the parathyroid is directly correlated with calcium and phosphate levels, It's the exact opposite of what hypoparathyroidism was. So a hyperparathyroidism is a high secretion of the PTH by the parathyroid gland. What that means is that we have a lot of PTH circulating in the system, working on both the kidneys and on the bones. So these patients are going to have hypercalcemia because the kidneys are just retaining as much calcium as they can, and the bones, through that process of breaking down, are releasing calcium into the bloodstream. So we're going to have hypercalcemia and hypophosphatemia. The main causes of someone when they have hyperparathyroidism are going to be like hyperplasia of the gland or some sort of adenoma, which is a non-cancerous growth. Or maybe they have cancer, which is stimulating the release of PTH into the system. So what do these patients look like when they've got hyperparathyroidism? Well, if we know that they've got way too much calcium in the system because we are releasing it and holding on to it, we need to watch for bone fractures. These patients are at super high risk of bone fractures. Why? Because we have so much PTH working on the bones, which is causing the bones to release calcium. Well, we need calcium for strong bones. So it goes hand in hand. These patients are also likely to have constipation. They might also have renal calculi or kidney stones because that parathyroid hormone is stimulating the kidneys to reabsorb calcium and excrete phosphate. Well, calcium oxalate kidney stones are the most common type of kidney stone that people get. So if we have too much calcium in the system, they're now at risk for developing a kidney stone. They might have nausea, vomiting. They might have epigastric pain, cardiac dysrhythmias, you know, EKG changes. You might see a short QT interval and hypertension. So what are we going to do and what are our interventions going to be? Well, because we know that we've got way too much calcium in the body because we're breaking it down from our bones and we're reabsorbing it from our kidneys, we're going to watch for kidney stones. We might strain the urine. We're going to encourage fluids, right? They might need some sort of surgical treatment like a parathyroidectomy where we remove the parathyroid glands to stop them from producing PTH. And then we're going to give medications with the entire goal being to decrease calcium in the system, not from the bones, but in the circulating plasma, decrease the parathyroid hormone, and keep these patients hydrated. So we're going to give them IV fluids. We're going to give them calcitonin, which helps to decrease calcium. We're going to give them loop diuretics, which decreases calcium by inhibiting calcium to be reabsorbed in the kidneys. That also goes with quite a bit of fluid excretion. So this is why keeping these patients hydrated is important. And then we'll give Fosamax or bisphosphonates, which slows down osteoclast activity and protects the bones a little bit more. And you're also going to need to do like fractured bone prevention, like make sure there's no trip hazards, things like that. And we're going to monitor their vital signs, their blood pressure, because we know that they were hypertensive, and watch for those cardiac dysrhythmias. These patients also, because the bones have just been breaking down and releasing calcium into the plasma, they're going to have skeletal pain. So it's really important for us to move these patients really slowly so as not to elicit additional pain, but also not to cause an unintended bone fracture. And then we're going to keep an eye on their lab values and watch their calcium and phosphate levels. Now, how do we know if it's worked? What's the evaluation, the education that we're going to provide? Well, we're going to know that it's worked when calcium levels come down and phosphate levels come back up. The main treatment for someone who's got hyperparathyroidism is to have a parathyroidectomy. So we need to, you know, remove those parathyroid glands so that the PTH is reduced in its secretion, which will remove all of these complications that we see, increase the fluid so that they don't get the kidney stones, and slow down the bones from breaking. So that's the nitty-gritty that I've got of hypo and hyperparathyroid assessment. Go forth and keep on learning.